It's a trap.
Hello and welcome to episode number 55 of Radio TCX,
your weekly source for X-Wing news and strategy.
I'm Tim Dugan.
And I'm Carson Ray. And boy, Tim, do we sure got a lot of news for today.
Yeah, it was kind of a surprising day. Here in Minnesota, we had some unseasonably warm weather for the month of March with some possible thunderstorms. And to add on to that, we got one of the most massive FAQ updates to X-Wing we've seen in the game's history.
Yeah, I think this one is bigger than the one that dropped just a few weeks before last year's Worlds.
Included in this new FAQ update were changes to four of the most significant cards in the current X-Wing metagame. Today we're going to talk about those changes and a handful of other more minor changes you might not have noticed reading through the FAQ the first time.
If it was good and meta-warping, it is now gone.
So, changes in the new FAQ, we saw alterations, errata updates to four of the big players in the current X-Wing metagame. Manaru, Zuckuss, Palpatine, and the TIE X7 title all got changes that significantly limit their effectiveness.
Yeah, these were, of course, the four biggest players in the competitive X-Wing meta for quite some time now. This was really the foundation that a lot of competitive lists were put up against. How does your ship withstand to its defense dice getting Zuckussed, and how can you push damage through against ships with X7 free evades, Palpatine modifying their defense rolls, or Manaru giving your target a ton of focus tokens that your swarm just can't chew through?
Well, let's start with Manaru. So Manaru's got a pretty significant change here. And this card's really important because it's showing up in two of the most popular lists in the metagame right now. The Paritani list, which is a Manaru with Fenn Rau and Asajj Ventress. And then Old Fenaru, as we call it, which is a list with Fenn Rau Protectorate, Old Tarak Protectorate, and Manaru as well.
Well, and of course, the squad that won Worlds, Dengaru, flying Dengar and Manaru, also severely crippled by this change.
Yeah, so this card was very relevant and now has been severely crippled. I would argue that before this change, it had one of the most far-reaching and powerful abilities that we've seen in the game of X-Wing. And now that's been severely and substantially pulled back and limited.
So Manaru originally read, at the start of the combat phase, you may assign all focus, evade, and target lock tokens assigned to you to another friendly ship. The new update now implemented a range 1 restriction, so you can pass all assigned focus, evade, and target lock tokens assigned to Manaru to another friendly ship at range 1 of Manaru.
And this might be the most substantial change. I guess the Palpatine change is pretty big, but this is one of the most substantial changes here in that now we had an ability that previously worked all the way across the game board. No range restriction there. You could have your Manaru in the corner with focus tokens and pass them to your Fenn Rau on the opposite side. Now he has to be within range 1, which is a very small window there, even for a big base ship.
I mean, the biggest abuser of the no range restriction on Manaru was definitely the Dengaru list, utilizing Lone Wolf on Dengar so that Dengar would get rerolls and then also focus tokens from Manaru.
I think part of the reason that this change is so substantial is that the lists that use Manaru, like Paritani, Old Fenaru, or Dengaru, all kind of depend on versatility and being able to adapt to the situation there. You don't want to have to depend on keeping that Manaru tight in with the rest of your squad, especially when we're talking about things like Paritani and Old Fenaru, where those ships might be all divided up at different locations, or Fenn Rau might be flanking. You really want to be able to leverage every opportunity you have. And before, Manaru could just pass focus tokens to whoever he wanted. Now you really have to plan where Manaru is going to be in order to leverage this ability.
Yeah, I mean, this is something skilled players can potentially work around. I think it's definitely a huge crippling change because you want to have options. Yes, you can fly your squad tight together to get the same level of efficiency that Manaru previously provided, but limiting your movements to stay within range one is, I think, a very severe restriction that skilled players, yeah, they can work towards it, but playing against other skilled players can really use that against you.
I think it's definitely going to take Manaru out of the hands of all but some of the better players at major events, because it's going to be really hard to leverage this ability in a consistent way.
That being said, I think there's still new lists out there that can benefit from the action advantage that Manru provides, but it's going to be squads that want to fly tight together and don't really ever want to spread out that much.
So we also saw, Carson, another change to a major scum and villainy upgrade card. Zuckuss had received new tech. Zuckuss has been kind of a problem for the game in that I feel like Zuckuss undermines some of the most fundamental parts of the game. Originally, the Zuckuss crew card came in at 1 point. It's scum only, and it read, when attacking, you may receive any number of stress tokens to choose an equal number of defense dice. The defender must re-roll those dice. So this was a problem for ace ships, where even if you had a lot of defense dice and you rolled pretty good, you know, double evades or what have you, Zuckuss could just undermine that. Now, this does come at a cost. You had to receive stress tokens to re-roll those dice, which would normally be enough to make a ship limit its use of this card. The problem was, is we were seeing Zuckuss played on ships like Dengar, who was getting tokens from Manaru, and then with cards like Overclocked Astromech allow him to use that Manaru passed focus token over and over again, which means he could have any number of stress tokens and still get effectively infinite numbers of modifications on his offense and defense. So there was no real penalty to using the Zuckuss card. You just keep piling up those stress tokens and getting free tokens from Manaru.
Right, and that's just one scenario. The scum list in particular has a lot of passive modifications without requiring actions. The Dengar crew is another great example that made the downside of the Zuckuss crew really a non-factor compared to the complete upside of just always re-rolling your opponent's defense dice. Now it's going to be, if you re-roll all three of their defense die, it's going to take you three turns to be able to use Zuckuss again, which is a great change.
Yeah, so the change they made was they added new text and changed around the text. So now Zuckuss reads, when attacking, if you are not stressed, you may receive any number of stress tokens to choose an equal number of defense dice. The defender must re-roll those dice. And I actually really like this change because I think it brings Zuckuss more in line with what the game designers probably intended him to be, as this kind of cheap crew has a pretty powerful ability for 1 point, but comes at a pretty steep cost. Because if you take more than one stress token, you're effectively preventing yourself from taking actions the following turns until you clear all those stress tokens.
Right, and you can actually still kind of list build around this. You can use the new Inspiring Recruit card to be able to clear two stress a turn, which will allow you to be able to use your Zuckuss more often, or just reroll two dice a turn.
Even still, it's going to make it harder for lists that use Dengar and Zuckuss, or a party bus, as we called it, Trandoshan Slaver with Zuckuss and some of the other cheap scum crew. They're not going to be quite as effective, particularly against ace ships like TIE Interceptors and TIE Advanced Prototypes.
Yeah, I mean, they still can do the one turn big punch, but if you aren't able to finish that ship off, then it's going to be a while before you can Zuckuss them again.
Moving on to the changes that we saw within the Imperial faction, the huge change here was Palpatine has been significantly reworded, substantially changing how his ability triggers. Before the change, Palpatine read, once per round, you may change a friendly ship's die result to any other die result. That die cannot be modified again. This was one of the most powerful effects in the game, actually being able to change a die result without any other kind of token modification. It was always there and available to you, albeit once per round.
So the Emperor Palpatine card was designed to be a huge boon for the Imperial team.
As represented by its cost, it took two crew slots and 8 points in your squad. So not a cheap cost there for this one card.
I mean, he's the premier Sith Lord, and his impact on the table was as such. He definitely was, I would say he was as powerful as he was intended to be. The issue was he limited the Imperial's list building options. It really pushed them just towards the ace end, where you got the most value out of protecting your ships, and really push players away from running triple aces or mixed ace swarm builds that you saw before Palpatine came out.
And it also took away some of the risky decisions that Imperial players would have to make by where they would place their ships on the board, because you always knew you had this backup here of, well, worst case scenario, I always have at least this one passive defensive modification. So if I blank out, I'm going to get this evade, or if I roll average with just a focus token, I'll probably average out two evades on my dice. Whereas now the decision making is a lot more difficult because you have to take the risk here. Well, when am I going to use Palpatine? I don't know the results of my roll before I use Palpatine. So I'll have to make that decision on how important is it that I get a strong attack here or have a really good defensive role.
Yes, so the new text on Palpatine reads, once per round, before a friendly ship rolls dice, you may name a die result. After rolling, you must change one of your dice results to the named result. That die result cannot be modified again.
So now, whereas before, when you were, say, rolling defense dice against a powerful attack, you could see your result and then decide, okay, I'm going to spend my focus token now, and then I'm going to use Palpatine, or I'm going to spend this evade token and use Palpatine and save my focus token for offense. You had a lot of decision-making you could make after the fact, so it's very easy to adapt to the changing die results. Whereas now, when you get attacked, you have to decide before you actually roll those dice, okay, how important is it that I get evade results here? What do I expect to roll with the tokens I have? It puts a lot more of the onus on the palp running player to make hard decisions and take risky maneuvers. Because you might potentially say, I'm going to use Palpatine on this roll to add an evade, and then you roll perfectly good natural evades, and then Palpatine's ability was effectively wasted.
Right, so the original wording on Palpatine allowed the Imperial player to be very efficient with their defensive resources. They only had to spend their tokens or Palpatine when they needed and got to use the right token or Palpatine to be as efficient as possible. Now they have to commit blindly beforehand and then are just reliant on their tokens to adjust afterwards.
So I think the real question here is, does this make Palpatine too weak to run for his high cost of 2 crew slots and 8 squad points?
It's meta-dependent. If there's not many attacks happening each round, then choosing to commit your Palpatine to the one big attack that's happening at your ship seems fine. If we see lists running lots of ships or ships that can attack multiple times in a round, like twin laser turret or effects like gunner cards allowing them to perform a second attack, then the value of Palpatine dramatically decreases. Where there's a lot more attacks you'll have to defend against, and you won't know which one is the right one to use Palpatine on.
So the other change we saw to the Imperial faction was another one of the most frequently used cards, the TIE X7 title for the TIE Defender. This card had made the TIE Defenders obscenely efficient in their action economy. Oftentimes they'd be able to get focus and evade tokens to modify their dice with very little cost to them, and even in situations where other ships would struggle to take any kind of action.
And it was obvious that the X7 title was beyond amazing when players were seriously debating whether or not another X7 defender was better in their list, or adding a shuttle with Palpatine in it was better.
Yeah, these defenders were insanely efficient, and part of that was due to the nature of the TIE X7 title, which, until the update, read as follows. Your upgrade bar loses the cannon and missile upgrade icons. After executing a 3, 4, or 5 speed maneuver, you may assign one evade token to your ship.
And this came in at -2 points. Now, it still comes in at -2 points and has the same you can't equip a missile or cannon header, but it now reads, after executing a 3, 4, 5 speed maneuver, if you did not overlap an obstacle or ship, you may perform a free evade action. Now, this is a lot different, the free evade action, as compared to just acquiring an evade token.
Yeah, there's actually two important clauses here that are very relevant into bringing the power level of this card back down to a reasonable level. Like you mentioned, Carson, now you are performing a free evade action. So the reason that's relevant when compared to assigning an evade token is that this free evade action could be prevented by having a stress token on a TIE defender.
Right, so now players can utilize mechanics like R3A2 to deal stress, or Tactician, or Asajj Ventress, to put stress on these defenders to turn off their X7 title, giving them those free evade tokens.
And since TIE defenders already have a very limited selection of green maneuvers, they're locked down to just their straight maneuvers. That very much limits their mobility or ability to even use things like 4K turn, unless they're counted as Riyadh.
Yeah, I mean, Riyadh with the Mark II ion engine still has an insane amount of green maneuvers. The defenders will be fine. I think they're just now brought down to where they should be. They're still going to be very efficient, but now players have tools to more efficiently attack them. Another option is, of course, blocking. So getting your ship in the way of their ship so that they can't completely execute their maneuver. This will also deny the free evade action. So swarm players will have an option of throwing one of their, say, Z95s in the way of a defender, block it, deny that evade result so that all of their other attacks can be hopefully more damaging.
Yeah, that middle clause is very important where it says if you do not overlap an obstacle or ship, because the obstacle thing is super relevant too. This change puts the burden of good play on the TIE Defender player, where now they have to make very careful decisions about how they perform their maneuvers. Does that three turn clear the obstacles all the way? Because if I clip it just a little bit, I'm going to lose out on my actions and I'm going to lose out on this free evade. Beforehand, even with ships like Countess Riad, who can get green K turns, so even if you stress them, now Riad still has to be careful around debris clouds and asteroids because it's a free evade action. I don't want to get stressed and I don't want to overlap because both of those things prevent me from getting this free evade action.
So those are the big four changes. I mean, the four powerhouse cards of the X-Wing meta, really for the past year of X-Wing, even a little bit more for Palpatine. These cards have been dominant forces in the game of X-Wing. Now with them being in different degrees of less impactful, it's really kind of interesting where the meta will shape up.
Yeah, I think that's actually really the biggest question right now is what does this mean for competitive X-Wing at premier events? Because we've got the Hoth system open coming up in Chicago in just a couple weeks. And I'm sure a lot of people were planning on bringing their Paratani builds and their Palpatine Ace builds. And we're going to have to see what list those players decide to bring to these events now that the meta is shaken up.
I mean, I think the Dengar Manru list, as we've previously seen it, is pretty unplayable. I mean, Dengar using both the long-range pass from Manru and the Zuckuss crew to extreme effect is now going to be pretty underwhelming. The Paratani list that has recently been dominating everywhere, I personally wouldn't play it. I found that, yeah, you have one of your ships usually within range of Manru, but that's not necessarily where you want to be putting the extra focus. And I think that limitation alone is enough to make me rethink it. I think there's probably still some options within Mind Link. I might just look for other ships not Manaru. So Fenn, Asajj, and maybe Palub or Guri are good options for Mind Link.
Yeah, I think that between Dengaru lists and Paratani lists, I think there's more potential for skilled players to make Paratani work, kind of in the same way that we saw really good Whisper players make Whisper work even after a Whisper's decloak timing changed.
As far as the Palpatine Aces, I can see players moving more towards the auto thruster Aces, Suntorfell and Inquisitor, who have the sort of defensive triggers that trigger on every attack, the auto thrusters, so that you don't have to commit as much resources to those defense rolls. And then on the, hopefully you're able to dodge most arcs so that there's not as many attacks coming back at you. And so you know when to use Palpatine effectively.
I think the big takeaway from all four of these changes is that in general, a lot of the ships that are really hard to hit right now are going to be a little bit easier to hit, which hopefully bodes well for the Rebel faction, which has been really held back by its inability to put out the kind of high power, consistently modified attack rolls that you need to take down Aces or heavily tokened Protectorate fighters.
I mean, do you think a crackshot TIE Swarm comes back with this?
You know, right now, it's so early to say. I think we could see all kinds of crazy stuff start to appear in the next couple weeks.
I mean, yeah, so this is the kind of level one change. Okay, Paratani, Dengaru, Palpatine Aces, X7 Defenders, Party Bus, really any Trandoshan Slaver using Zuckuss, all go down quite a bit. What moves up to take their place? I mean, so the list that were checked down because of those have a chance to resurface. But it's really, I think, more than any other time in X-Wing, probably the most wide open right now.
I honestly couldn't say where the metagame's going to go right now, but I think there's definitely going to be some fallout from these changes, and I think it's going to be substantial. So hopefully we'll find out. I guess the Hoth system open will be the first test of this to see what some of the best players in the country can come up with. In addition to those major changes, there were a handful of other smaller changes spread throughout the new FAQ. We're not going to talk about all of those. You guys can check them out in the FAQ document hosted on Fantasy Flight's website. They mark all the new changes in red, so if you really just want to see the new stuff, you can check out all the red text. There were a couple interesting points that they added that kind of clarify some existing game rules, some in ways that we expected and some that we didn't even know we needed clarification on yet. One of the first one is effects that affect multiple ships at the same time. We're talking things like Chopper Pilot's ability, where he deals a stress at the start of combat, or Unkar Plutt in the Quad Jumper, who deals a Tractor Beam token to every ship that touches him at the end of the activation phase. Now, Fantasy Flight has specified when there's abilities like this that affect multiple ships at the same time, the player using the effect, so the player flying Chopper or flying Unkar Plutt, chooses the order in which ships receive these tokens or effects.
This is particularly important with Unkar Plutt when he gives tractor beam tokens to multiple ships. He now has the option to choose how those tractor beam tokens reposition ships, which could, of course, impact where the future ships have repositioning options.
Yeah, because since he's giving them effectively straight boosts or barrel rolls, it's really important the order you choose there, so that I might barrel roll this guy away so that this ship can barrel roll into the space he was in. I don't know if this came up a lot in a lot of games. I don't know how many people are flying Unkar Plutt right now. I've never seen him on a table so far. But these are important clarifications that we see in the rules for when we get future abilities that trigger like this. So maybe it's not relevant now with people flying Unkar Plutt or Chopper, but there might be future pilots or upgrades that trigger at the same time. So it's nice to get a clarification and a precedent so that when new cards come out, we're not surprised and we don't have to figure out how to handle these interactions.
Yeah, and another interesting interaction update we got is from the Kanan Jarrus crew card. Previously, Kanan's ability where after a friendly ship executes a white maneuver, you may remove a stress token. This was utilized on the Rey Falcon with the new Millennium Falcon title where after you perform a 3-white bank, you can receive a stress token and flip around. So these two abilities trigger at the same time. So previously, players were deciding which order to trigger the stress token and then the Kanan crew to clear it.
The reason this is relevant is because that's actually a very powerful thing you could do with a Kanan on a Rey Falcon with the new Falcon title, where I perform a 3-bank, I trigger the Millennium Falcon title to flip my ship around. Basically, it becomes a 3-sloop. I would receive a stress, and then Kanan would trigger, and I would be able to remove that stress immediately. So I basically got a white sloop, which, as evidenced by the Jumpmaster, is a very powerful maneuver. Now we've got some clarification on officially how this interaction triggers, and it's a little weird because it seems a little inconsistent across different card abilities.
Right, so it'll still work powerfully with the new Millennium Falcon title. You'll get to do the 3-bank flip around, turn it into a S-loop, get the stress, remove the stress with Kanan. But if you use inertial dampeners, you'll get the stress after Kanan's ability would resolve.
Yeah, so it's interesting because Fantasy Flight has now specified that cards that perform maneuvers like inertial dampeners, which allows you to perform a white one-stop and then receive a stress, or Daredevil, which allows you to perform a one hard turn and then receive a stress. Kanan does not trigger after you would receive the stress from those abilities, but before you would receive the stress from using inertial dampeners or Daredevil, which I think is an interesting ruling, and I feel like they're going to have to now, every time a card comes out that does an ability like this, have to specify, does it trigger before the stress token is received or after?
So hopefully they don't make too many more of those for themselves.
The last clarification we saw was for the I'll Show You the Dark Side condition card, which of course is dealt either by the Kylo Ren crew or the Kylo Ren pilot on the Upsilon class shuttle. It wasn't exactly clear before how he dealt the crit that you put on the I'll Show You the Dark Side card, so now we have some clarification officially in the FAQ.
So unfortunately, that damage card is dealt under shields. So if you have shields and a critical result is dealt to you, and you just remove that one shield from the critical result, instead of removing that shield, you'll be dealt the critical result from I'll Show You the Dark Side, which is really unfortunate for ships like Corrin Horn. Then we also got clarification that the Darth Vader crew, which can trigger face-up damage cards, does not count as part of the attack, so it won't trigger I'll Show You the Dark Side.
And we also got clarification that Merrick Steele's ability, which when you deal a face-up damage card, you get to draw 3 and choose one, his ability does not trigger when you deal a crit with I'll Show You the Dark Side, which is actually good specification, because the fear was that you'd put a pilot crit card on I'll Show You the Dark Side, then when you deal a crit, you'd get to draw extra cards, then choose an even nastier ship crit from the selection there. So we got some clarification there on Merrick Steele's ability.
So to get the I'll Show You the Dark Side to trigger and Merrick Steele's ability to trigger as well within the same Merrick attack, you would need to deal 2 critical results. So the first critical result that's not evaded will trigger I'll Show You the Dark Side, and then any critical results after that that aren't evaded will trigger Merrick Steele's ability if those crits are being dealt the whole.
These are just a handful of the more minor changes that we saw in the new FAQ. I would definitely recommend checking out the FAQ on Fantasy Flight's website and just seeing all the new interesting changes. There was some other cool stuff that is a little too minute for us to talk about on the show. Hey, Radio TCX patrons, it's time to announce our March raffle winners. For the month of March, we decided to give away four different prizes, including an Inquisitor promo card from Worlds, a 10 Numb Alt Art promo card from one of the older tournament kits, a 3-pack of Fantasy Flight Tournament Kit Stress Tokens, and a 3-pack of Tournament Kit Fantasy Flight Ion Tokens.
To be eligible for the raffle each month, you need to become a supporter of the show on patreon.com/radioTCX before the start of each month.
So without further ado, our winners are: winning the Inquisitor promo card is Bruno Pugliese. Congratulations, Bruno.
Congratulations, Bruno. And winning the 10 Nub promo card is William Spearman. Congratulations, William. Thank you for supporting the show.
Winning the stress tokens is John Bruns. Congratulations, John.
And winning the Ion tokens is Brian Wilson. Thank you for supporting the show, and congratulations on those tokens.
And a huge thank you to everyone who supports us on Patreon. I know we've had some issues getting rewards out so far. We're still working on that, but we really appreciate your guys' ongoing support on Patreon and just by listening to the show. If you're interested in becoming a patron of Radio TCX, please go to patreon.com/radioTCX and become a supporter today.
All right, now back to the cast.
Before we close out the show, we wanted to talk about something really cool that's been going on in the Twin Cities X-Wing community over the past year or so, a really cool initiative that one of our local players took on.
Yeah, so for the past year, Wade Pache, who's been on the show, has been tracking results from every local tournament in the Twin Cities past year, starting in March, and it's culminating in a final March Madness showdown this weekend.
So basically what Wade did was track all the results from every little tournament that happens using people's names. If you didn't want to be listed, you could always ask to have your name removed. That was fine. But it was really cool. So he basically tracked your MOV and your average MOV over the number of games you won, so that once you hit a certain threshold after 12 tournaments you played in, you could start to be eligible for ranking in the top 32 in the local X-Wing community.
I personally just really enjoyed tracking my MOV and trying to, you know, get that as high as possible. For a while, for a long time there, I was in the sweet exclusive 130 MOV or higher per game average, which I was pretty proud of, and then tanked it in the last month and dropped down a few places to just, I think I have like 127 average MOV.
Yeah, I was fortunate enough to end the season in fourth place overall, which is really cool. I'm really actually proud of that. It's nice to see playing all these little tournaments, like actually see that represented in a meaningful way so that you can, you know, share your successes with the rest of the community. A really cool idea from Wade. It is culminating now in a big tournament. He's calling it the March Madness Tournament, where the top 32 players get to compete in a bracket-style March Madness Tournament to see who the best player in the Twin Cities is. It's going to be a single elimination tournament, so if you lose a round, you're out of the whole tournament. But Wade's also planning some really cool stuff, side events for other people who didn't make the top 32 or get eliminated early on. And he's letting everybody actually fill out brackets so that you can try to guess who's going to win which round, who's going to be the overall champion, and then give out prizes based on how accurate people's estimations are.
Yeah, the top 32 March Madness tournament was something he tried out first last year, just taking rankings off of store championships. But now with the complete year of X-Wing Ultimate scores, we have a much better ranking system for the top 32, which also really helps players fill out those brackets, especially if you aren't familiar with everybody's play skill. Just looking at their average MOV gives you a nice idea of how they'll perform. Although, of course, there's the gaming of the bracket. To win your bracket, you obviously have to guess the most correct wins, which is not necessarily always the highest ranked MOV people.
Yeah, so it's a really cool system. I'm excited for him to start the next season next month. If you guys are interested in the Twin Cities Ultimate March Madness event, there's going to be a lot of side events. So if you're in or around the Twin Cities, it's happening at the Fantasy Flight Game Center this Saturday starting at 11 a.m., come check it out, fill out a bracket, and see some really good high-level X-Wing play.
And of course, thank you, Wade, for all of the time you've put into this. We're both really excited for the tournament, and of course, hoping for a Radio TCX final.
Wouldn't that be something? Thank you guys so much for listening to this episode of Radio TCX. If you enjoyed the show, please consider going on to facebook.com/radioTCX and liking our Facebook page.
You can follow us on Twitter @RadioTCXPodcast. We'll be, of course, updating you on the March Madness event there.
And if you really enjoy listening to the show, please consider going onto iTunes and leaving us a 5-star review with a comment saying what you like about the show and why other X-Wing players might be interested in listening.
If you want to support the show directly, please go on to patreon.com/radiotcx and become a supporter of the show today.
Again, guys, thank you for listening, and we'll talk to you next week.